two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Your home for the best football coverage in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone.
Turn it up.
The Aggies look to become bowl eligible as they square off against San Jose State this Saturday in Logan. Your home for the play-by-play action of Aggie football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. You're listening to Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Big one for Utah as they head to Eugene to take on the Oregon Ducks. Jerry Allen, he is the play-by-play voice of the Ducks, kind enough to join us. Jerry, how are you?
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys, doing pretty well. How you doing? We got sunshine and blue skies here through fog. Probably not as nice as it is there, but still, we'll take it.
It is sunny, but it is cold, and it's about 22 degrees, so I'm going to take the Eugene weather over this for sure.
Okay, I would share that with you. Cold's not good.
Hey, obviously this is so big. I know Oregon stubbed their toe a little bit, but this is a big one. Do you get that sense around the community of the enormity of this game coming up on Saturday?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, you know, one of the goals that Oregon had was to get to the college football playoff. I think that's what, you know, probably four or five of the top teams in the Pac-12 were all pointing to, and Utah certainly one of those. But, you know, to lose that game to Washington kind of takes that away. But the Pac-12 championship, you know, to get to play in that game and maybe get a chance to go to the Rose Bowl, that's still on the table. And these guys realize it. I mean, the fans, I'm sure, are disappointed. They don't get over things as quickly as the kids do. But, no, this is a big game. This is the rest of the season. I mean, you start losing back-to-back games, and things get tough really quickly.
Let's talk about that Washington game a little bit more. 34-37 loss, and I think all of us watched that thing and just scratching our heads at times trying to figure out what was up and what was down. There were so many crazy things in that game. But overall, that emotional loss, how hard is that sitting on Dan Lanning? How hard is that sitting on Bo Nix? How hard is that sitting on the team?
Well, you know, surprisingly, it's sitting on it, but not as much as one would think. Remember, these guys came off of an embarrassing season-opening thumping by Georgia, Dan Lanning's team, where he won a national championship last year. And they bounced back and had a great season from that game on. So they know how to get over the hump when bad things happen. That was a bad, bad loss. And they responded pretty well, and I think that's due to Dan Lanning and his staff. So even though it was a tough loss and you hate losing those rivalry games, they feel like they still got so much ahead of them that they're not ready to hang their head yet.
What's your early impression of Dan Lanning as head coach there?
I'm a little probably over the top on him from the first time I met him. He just seemed really engaged and genuine. He wanted to know who I was, what I did, where I come from, why I'm there. He treats everybody like that. He treats the media with respect. He treats the fans, and so he's tied to his job as a head coach and having to win and coach his players, but he gets the rest of it. And he's obviously a brilliant defensive mind, and I think he hired the right coordinators to get the job done too. So I'm right now. He's got to prove it. I mean, they got to win games. They got to get some championships. But down the road, I think this guy's got a chance to be a Hall of Fame coach.
Kind of a bit of a self-serving question, but you had a bird-eye view on that illegal touching call at the end of that game against Washington. What was your take on that?
You know, we didn't get a very good view of it. It was right in front of the Oregon bench. I think that's when you're talking about Troy Franklin going out of bounds, I guess, and then coming back in. We never got a good look at it, so all we could do, honestly, is say, gosh, that's a tough call at a moment like that in the game, because if he did step out, it was the heel of his shoe, and did it go down or was it just the toe? But you know, you look back at too many other opportunities in the game that you had and you didn't execute, or your defense didn't do a good enough job to stop Michael Penix Jr. So that was a frustrating moment of the game, because I think Oregon has a chance to probably kick a field goal, tie it up, and at home, great chance to win in overtime. But that's the call that got made, and we just kind of live with it.
Are there a lot of talks about last year with the two losses to Utah down the stretch in that season, or is it just, hey, that was a different coaching staff, that was a different team, this is an entirely different year?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think that there's some guys on this team that remember it, and you know, to remember those games and how poorly you played and how well Utah played, you know, you remember those things and you want another chance. So some of those guys are like, yeah, that stung, that hurt. But there are a lot of new guys, and it's a whole new coaching staff, a different whole scenario. So it's kind of a mixture of both. Guys that remember that, don't like it, want to make up for it, and guys that are just looking forward for an opportunity to get over the Washington loss.
I've been really pleased watching Bo Nix, and I got to watch that BYU game up close and absolutely loved that game. Thought it was a fantastic game for Oregon, and Bo Nix played so well. Deadly both through the air and on the ground. Just in your opinion, Bo Nix's performance this year, how high ranking is it? How impressed have you been of him?
Well, there have been a lot of quarterbacks at Oregon that have played better. Obviously, Justin Herbert is one of those. Marcus Mariota, one of those. But I put Bo Nix, you know, right up there with them, depending on how the season finishes and what he can do, because he's been pretty spectacular, managing his team, reading defenses, making the right call, getting the ball to the right people. His legs, you know, spectacular. I think he's got, 15 touchdown rushes now or something like that. He's the complete package. He really is matured into that senior, that final year guy, although he could come back for another year. But, he's everything. So I'd put him in the top three or four of quarterbacks that have played at Oregon since I've been there, certainly. And, you know, if he can get Oregon to a Pac-12 championship and win a big game, maybe like in a Rose Bowl, and add some more numbers to that, I'd say he's got a chance to be a first-round pick next year.
When you've watched teams prepare against him and defenses scheme against him, what have you seen that's been more successful, and what have you seen that Bo Nix has taken advantage of?
Well, I think the key, you know, for Bo Nix, is offensive line. Bo does a lot. He throws the ball well. He reads defenses. He can escape and extend plays. But the key to what Bo Nix is able to do is because the run game works. Bucky Irving is able to, you know, make that defense play honest. And the offense just doesn't let many people get to Bo. I think they work together so well. So I think the key for Bo has been the offensive line, protecting him and giving him time to operate and do what he does. And he's pretty calm back there. I think, you know, that's probably the thing that has impressed me the most, is he doesn't seem to get rattled. Those feet aren't jumping up and down, bouncing around. He'll survey the field, go through his progressions and find a guy that's open. So I think that's why no one guy is, you know, heads above everybody else. I mean, certainly Troy Franklin was kind of a go-to guy, but he spreads the ball around pretty well. If he does anything that irritates me, or I wouldn't even say irritates me, it just scares me, is when he takes off and runs. Anytime your key guy does that, something bad could happen. But so far this year, with the exception of last Saturday night when he got dinged up, when he's run, he's made good things happen.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I've not checked multiple sites on this. The site I'm on that I usually use for stats in preparation for a game has a number that I have a hard time believing. So you need to tell me if this is a typo or not. Has Oregon only given up two sacks this year?
No, that is correct. The second sack was against Washington. And that's that offensive line I'm talking about, and the mobility of Bo Nix. Yeah. Teams just don't get to him.
So again, last year 24 sacks given up by Oregon. This year only two. So you, if you were to give it a percentage, a certain percentage out of 100 goes to the offensive line, another percentage goes to Bo Nix. How would you split that up?
Boy, it'd be tough to split it up other than 50-50 because Bo Nix is probably not the quarterback with the numbers that he has if he doesn't have that offensive line in front of him. And the offensive line could be doing a great job, but if you don't have a quality guy behind you, then that offensive line is not going to get recognized. Maybe a couple of percentage points more to the O-line because the running backs are taking advantage of that O-line as well. But they complement each other. They really do. It's kind of amazing to think that through this whole season – that Bo Nix has only been sacked two times.
What's going to be fun to watch this Utah offense going up against this Oregon defense? I know that there's been some points given up throughout the year, a couple 40 points, a couple 30 points. And I know that Utah's got quite the capability at putting the ball in the end zone. Your thoughts on this Oregon defense against Cam Rising, Tavian Thomas, who emerged again last week, and this Utah offense?
Boy, it's probably going to be one of the biggest jobs Oregon's had in a while. I think UCLA was that type of a team with a great running back and a great quarterback, and that's Utah. I mean, so most coaches will tell you we got to try to make a team one-dimensional, take something away from them. I don't know what you take away. Do you take away the running back? Do you take away the quarterback? I mean, Utah is so complimentary about what they do. It's difficult to load up on one and take the other way. Or I will say this, and I don't think it's any secret, Oregon, has had some issues in the back end of that defense, giving up a lot of yards. And so that's something they're going to be working on really, really very hard this week and hope that doesn't give up the run. It's going to be interesting because I think Utah presents some problems that most teams have not presented this year, and that is that dual-pronged attack.
I know that you're in a kind of a precarious situation, can't really comment on this specifically, but with the whole, UCLA and USC going to the Big Ten, and a lot of question marks surrounding the future of Oregon and Washington and where they may be going and the Pac-12 and now I guess the Pac-10 overall, how has that affected the Oregon fan base? Are there conflicting feelings about what the future holds with that conference and potentially a future conference? What's the vibe up there in regards to expansion and where things are shaking out right now?
Well, I think fans are probably going through what most of us in the media are going through out here particularly, and that is when the initial announcement came down, the sky was falling. I mean, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. You know, what's going to happen? Where are we going to go? Oh, no, oh, us, oh, me. And then as the season started progressing along and no other decisions came out, and then the games took central focus, and then the fight for maybe getting up in the polls to get to a Final Four. I mean, there are things that didn't make you totally forget about it, but there's just nothing coming out. And I think fans have kind of realized that we're not going to hear something until we hear something, much like what happened when USC and UCLA announced. It's going to come out of the clear air. So that whole worry about where are we going to be, what are we going to do, is sort of died down for right now. I mean, it's still in the back of the mind. Don't get me wrong. I mean, because it could be great or it could be terrible, but it's not front of mind right now.
Fans still plenty engaged. Autzen Stadium still going to be crazy for these Utes as they come in Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and because Utah, you know, is a great program. Utah's put some spankings on Oregon at Autzen Stadium. I mean, there have been some games when Oregon fans remember more than the guys playing the game this year that Utah came in and embarrassed Oregon. So those are the kind of things that, you know, start rivalries and create rivalries. Plus the fact that you got a team that's been so good for so long. I think that's Utah. A lot of respect for Utah. Hate going to Utah and playing. I mean, Oregon fans, I think Oregon team players would much rather play this game than some of the most teams would. But going to Utah is not easy because their fans are like crazy good. So to get them at Autzen is big. And I think the respect that Oregon has for Utah is not hatred like they have for Washington, but it's, gosh, find a different word. It's not hate. It's just like, don't like Utah. They're too damn good.
a respectful disdain, maybe.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Well, hey, we certainly appreciate your time. Thanks for hopping on with us. Look forward to catching up with you again here soon, and enjoy the game on Saturday. Should be a fun one.
Scott, good to have let me on. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that. In fact, if you want to go for another 2 hours, I'm happy to talk.
We got another 2 hours of the show, so there you go. Hey, thanks. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Good stuff, man. Utah, Oregon coming up on Saturday.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on kslpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.